Motherfucker try to say I can't come to the hood. True lie. See, I would, but I'm out in Dubai. When I get back, I'ma roll through that. Snatch your bitch, give your niggas that.
We're back. Roundtable edition. Got a handful of people here. Maybe more gonna join. Maybe somebody, some of them couldn't make it right on the dot when we started recording. But we're gonna give these guys, you listeners, a chance to speak on what happened this past week in boxing. With the exception of one thing, I'm not taking any questions. No rants. No complaining. None of that on Canelo's test. Okay, my apologies. We're not going to do that. I got a whole other thing coming out, and I do not. I mean, you as a listener don't want to hear 3-4 hours of content on Canelo's dirty drug test. And we already have like 2 hours coming. So sorry, guys, we're not going to do that. There's a lot of content on that anyway. So let's get right into things. We had a pretty fantastic day of boxing yesterday. We had Oscar Valdez delivering another war at the StubHub Center. We had Mikey Garcia. Now, this is going to sound a little weird, but face some adversity. Now, some adversity is like a big deal for Mikey because this is a guy who's one of the pound-for-pound best fighters in the sport and doesn't typically run into this stuff. We saw possibly Rancis Bartholomew expose himself as being shot, really. I mean, this is a guy that was terrific at 135, and what Cuban school of boxing? The Cuban school of boxing is dead. We got one guy left, one guy standing, Arislan de Lara, and the way things are going, Jarrett Hurd's about to unify. So let's, do I want to speak on Regis Progre, or does the hype speak for itself? We've been trying to tell you guys, you British fans, some of you guys may not be that familiar with Regis Progre, but he's here. He is here. And so I'm going to open this up now. We're going to bring someone in. Let's see what they want to talk about. All right, let's go with Peter or Piotr, however you want me to say your name. I'm going to unmute you and go right into it. Peter?
Rancis Bartholomew came out there after a controversial first decision win against Kirill Relic.
Yep.
And Kirill, I mean, where does he even stand at 140? That's the thing I'm still trying to figure out, because Kid Blast was really damn good at 135. Quality wins over Mickey Bay and Denis Shafikov. None of the shenanigans that surrounded his win over Robert Easter Jr. But then he comes in and he just can't pull the trigger. He can't fire. I'm not quite sure what happened to him. Did he lose it for the sport? But he just can't actually throw punches when he's being pressured. And that's something that I suppose has been seen more and more prevalently with the downfall of the Cuban school, as you kind of mentioned, where guys just can't fend off pressure when they've got someone going in with clean or at the very least accurate shots that are throwing them off their tempo. Now, going into the whole question about, is he done? I can't see him really rebounding at the world level after a humiliating fight like this. After Amir Imam, just think about a comparison. Amir Imam went out there and he was still a prospect when he got humiliated by Granados, I believe. Imam's still rebuilding. He's about to get back onto the world title track. He's young enough that he can do that. Going in for Rancis Bartholomew, he was a world champ, but he can't do it. He's just not there right now. And he doesn't have the time to rebuild there. So he's probably not even at a Sergei Lipinets level. He's probably not at a, possibly at a Julius Ndongo level. But
well, that's a whole other story that we'll get into in a bit.
So that's my rant. I was just really disappointed coming in as a Kid Blast fan and watching him soundly get just outboxed and outfought for 12 rounds and then end off a showing where he just did nothing with a flagrant low blow to foul it off.
Well, Do you really think that, because it was flagrant in that its location was pretty low, although not as low as the low blow that Oscar Valdez got hit with.
Oh, yeah.
See, there's a thing of, was it intentional? Didn't look that intentional to me. I mean, Bartholomew, he's just a weird fighter. He's really weird. Like, he does, I mean, of all the Cuban fighters that we've seen that fight in the Cuban style, Bartholomew's deviated so far, yet still maintains the I guess, the appearance of it, but it's just not there. And the interesting thing about this fight was that Bartholomew, you're right, he's basically, he doesn't have what he used to have. And at 135, and this is what I think, is that at 140, Bartholomew no longer had the confidence that he had at 135, because he's a big guy for 135. I mean, he's, what, 5'11"? He's, but when he comes to 140, he's fleshy, still making weight, and no longer is he able to bully guys. And I think that really got to him. And 140 was an absolute mistake for him. This is a guy who should have never left 135 unless he was really unable to make the weight. This seems like another situation similar to the Carl Frampton situation, where moving up in weight is strict, and I guess Mikey Garcia to an extent, moving up in weight was basically a way to go easier on your training, and they both get away with it in Frampton and Garcia's case because they actually have the skill to compete at those higher weight classes. Bartholomew does not, and so
he thought he had the skill.
Yeah, well,
he had it in him.
Yeah, he would have had the skill if you know, he would have fought like he used to, but for some reason, that dude he just didn't have the confidence. Yeah, I mean, he looked like a shot fighter, and that's interesting, and kind of sad, given that he's not that old. This isn't right. Luis Ortiz. Anything else on Rancis Bartholomew? You want to scold him some more?
I kind of want to just say that I'm disappointed, because I fully thought that he could probably be competitive, if not beat convincingly a guy like Linares or Robert Easter Jr. if he stayed at 135. But his whole decision to go up kind of derailed the chance he had to solidify himself as the dominant 135 pounder.
Yeah, so he's now basically just going to become one of those stories of why you don't move up in weight if you don't really need to. If you have an advantage that's allowing you to dominate. And I'm going to take this, make a comparison to MMA. Although I'm not the most knowledgeable about MMA, I do know that Conor McGregor basically drained himself up, made whatever weight he was in. Somebody needs to help me. Ranger, please help me. You're not muted. 145. And then he moved up to, what was the weight class that he fought Diaz in? 170. So he made 145 by draining himself, but had a massive size advantage. And with the power that he has, I mean, connects and guys are gone. Then he moves up to 170, basically doesn't have, well, he still had enough skill to compete, but he lost. And then drops back down to 150-something. And it's like, if you have an advantage, why not take it? You got to keep working hard.
Weight cutting is a legitimate tactic, and it's a legitimate skill.
Oh, absolutely.
People say that people are weight bullies for
absolutely
being able to cut more weight are just delusional.
Yeah, no, that's that. The ability to effectively cut weight and still be effective is a skill that isn't frequently discussed, but it has such a massive impact on the fight. Let's move on. Stu Mac, you have something to say about, could somebody help me unmute? So like, just how we do this is we do it on Discord, and I mute and unmute people as they speak. And Stu Mac is now unmuted, and Stu Mac has something to say about Julius Ndongo. Now, please tell me that you picked Ndongo to win this fight against Progre.
No, I think Ndongo the fact he has been in so many title shots is pretty offensive to other fighters at 140, because I don't think he was ever good. He got very fortunate in the fact that he caught, how do you pronounce that Russian guy's name?
Troyanovsky.
He caught Troyanovsky with that fucking wacky ass overhand left and knocked him out in one.
Don't diss then, Zolani Tete's style.
Then his second when he unified, he fought against Ricky Burns, who has never adapted in his life. The guy can't change how he fights. He got passed on that wacky ass overhand left that caught Burns by surprise, and he did nothing about it. And then as soon as fighters can watch film and realize all he has is that wacky ass overhand left, he's just a below average fighter with poor, awful footwork and one decent punch.
I mean, that punch isn't that decent, first of all. It happened to catch Troyanovski, but there's not that much film on Ndongo, but where have we seen that punch really be effective against anybody else in any other situation other than against Troyanovski? Didn't work on Crawford.
It worked on Burns, but they landed it.
I could land on Burns.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That he got very lucky with his first two title fights, and that's the only reason he got two more afterwards.
But this speaks to, one, the power of knockouts. You score a knockout that nobody's expecting, and suddenly everyone thinks you're a puncher and wants to see you fight. And that's really how Ndongo got these fights.
But he didn't knock people out in fucking Namibia. Is it like, he was never a puncher?
Oh, absolutely. But I'm just saying, people don't do their homework. Promoters see one good highlight, and literally one highlight could sell a big fight, at least a title fight. You could convince HBO or now ESPN or any of these guys to put on a fight if one of the guy has one amazing knockout that is actually recent. I wanted to ask you, since you're from Scotland, which I'm sure is pretty obvious to those of you listening, what was it like being a Ricky Burns fan when Burns was being considered as a guy who could beat Adrian Broner?
I wouldn't call myself a Burns fan. You know, I always liked it when he was doing well, but I did always realize Burns was a guy who
You do sound like
up.
A Burns mark.
I realized Burns was always a guy propped up by fortunate matchmaking, and, you know, calling him a three-weight division champion is a bit
Stop.
Overselling him. I think he's got a world-class chin, and he's got a good heart, but that's about it. He doesn't do much else.
Well, technically, he has a metal chin, first of all. And second of all, I do agree with you. Ndongo was, I never saw the appeal of him. Even in the Burns fight, it's not like Ndongo completely outclassed him. He beat him, but it was basically like an Anthony Crolla win, where it's like, yeah, you won because you work harder, but that's about it. And Ndongo basically just kept catching on because of he had one good highlight, really. And he was awful in the Prograis fight. The moment Prograis got inside and began to land the jab to the body, that was it. Like, Ndongo was completely uncomfortable when he got hit to the body. It was ridiculous that a guy who was a former world champion looked so unprepared for body shots. Anything else, Dumec?
Yeah, not really. I think we all saw the Prograis fight. We all saw Ndongo look lost. I think he just relied on Pete so hard in that overhand left, not letting people get on the inside. And then as soon as someone got on the inside against him, they just did body work in both the Crawford and Prograis fight.
I mean, the thing that the takeaway for me from that fight is that Ndongo is a really likable guy, and it kind of sucks to see a guy like him lose. Like, you just don't want to see the Ndongos of the world take a loss. They just seem like guys you just have to root for, like an Anthony Crolla.
Yeah, I do get what you're saying. You always want those African guys who come out of nowhere with 20 wins out of Namibia. You always want them to be world-class hidden away, but there's a reason why it took him 20 fights to get out of Namibia.
You don't see two guys really, Nambia or whatever it's called. Let's move off from Stu Mac. Thank you, Stu Mac. Thank you, Peter. We are going to go to, is it Ranger? You're the one that's putting stuff in that you want to go. Tony, go ahead.
What was the question?
There is no question. It's up to you. You're the one that can ask a question, or you could say what you like. I mean, you could comment on the fact that Dom Ziggler is copying Bret Hart / Shawn Michaels attire, and he has a stupid braid on, but that's just one example of something you can talk about.
Well, I wanted to comment on Lipinets. I wasn't expecting him to be so competitive yesterday. So I was genuinely impressed by how he was catching Mikey Garcia with some good shots and gave him a pretty tough fight.
Now, do you actually think that Lipinets did well, or was it basically a function of you being, I guess, either you didn't really know too much about him, or what you knew, you had decided he wasn't good? Like, what do you think the case was? Because how you feel about him is a function of your expectations on how he would have done.
Yes. Well,
It wasn't a yes or no question.
Okay, well, I assume he wouldn't do so well just given his short professional career. You know, you got Mikey, he's been champ in 3 other divisions, and he's close to his 40th fight. And Lipinets, what was it, like his 14th fight last night? So I expected him to just get blown out of there, but he was pretty competitive, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know too many people that were really, at the very least, not impressed. Or no, I think I should say, I don't know anybody who wasn't impressed with Lipinets. At the very least, you have to say, like, that guy was there, like, throwing shots and trying to win the fight. You know, you get a lot of guys, even guys who are champions, who get in the ring with the Mikey Garcias, you know, the pound-for-pound best fighters in the world, and they're just happy to be there, and they're not really going for it. They're really trying to keep themselves from getting knocked out or outboxed or embarrassed or some version of that. And Lipinets came in there and looked at Mikey eye to eye and saw that he was on his level, that he didn't need to get anywhere. He just needed to fight his fight. Now, unfortunately for him, fighting his fight only meant that he would win a handful of rounds against Garcia, which is, on one hand, more than most people will win against Mikey, but on the other hand, he still lost the fight.
Yeah, but he looked impressive doing so, and like you said, one more rounds than, you know, most of Garcia's opponents probably have, and that just means, you know, Lipinets will probably look good against others that aren't Mikey Garcia.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that one. I knew that Lipinets was a decent fighter, and at the very least, unorthodox and tricky, and he really did that. And it's the thing about Mikey is just such a joy to watch. Like, Mikey had an answer for everything. The only thing that Lipinets really had going for him that was consistent throughout the fight to some extent was his jab. And even then, Mikey had answers for him. I mean, the 1-2 that Mikey kept landing, it was like, Lipinets, are you serious? Should I say what you just wrote in the chat, Tony?
No.
Tony had... No, I think I should say it. Tony wrote, "I envy Lipinets' relationship with his daughter." I don't know how I should interpret that. Like, does that mean you want a daughter? Does that mean you would appreciate kissing Lipinets in the lips and maybe even using a little tongue? I don't know.
No, I meant I wish I had someone that was that worried about me, that like they literally were in tears over my, you know, potential death from a Mikey Garcia punch.
That is I mean, maybe that's really touching. I don't know.
Yeah.
We should move on, though, before you get arrested.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Let's say Mikey Garcia does very well at 140 and he decides to move up to 147. And he eventually faces the, he'll face like Earl Spence and Crawford. How do you think he does against those guys?
Oh, I don't think it would be that pretty. I mean,
for who?
Mikey carried his power up to 140. You could tell Lipinets' punches, while they didn't hurt him or anything, did get to him. He did feel them. And Lipinets, he was definitely pouring blood out of his nose. But Mikey is, I mean, he's not shredded out at 140. He's very fleshy. And I think he could beat some of the fringe contenders at the division.
The PBC guys?
He could beat a Pacquiao, Static Eruption, says Peterson or Vargas. I think those are all fights that are definitely winnable for him. Oh, my God. White Ranger, are you watching this? This is like a meme right here. I think that he could also beat, you know, like a David Avanesian or, you know, those, that level of fighter for sure. But when you're talking about the top guys, when you talk about Spence, Crawford, Thurman, Crawford is the number one pound for pound fighter in the world.
Do you think he at least makes it competitive, or is he just going to get blown out of there?
I don't see him. He could possibly be competitive. Possibly. Like, I think Danny Garcia is a really interesting fight, because Danny is not the kind of guy that's going to rush after Garcia, and he's going to try to counter, which would mean that Mikey is going to get a lot of opportunities to land on him. But I just don't see Mikey. Like, Mikey weighed in at 147 last night, as Static Eruption points out. He weighed in at 147. He rehydrated 7 pounds. Like, you shouldn't move up in weight if you're not rehydrating at least 15 pounds from the division you fight in, where you weigh in. So if Mikey didn't rehydrate to 155 last night, there's no way he could be competitive with the top guys. Just not the Thurmans, not the Crawfords, not the Spence. These guys are just way too big.
Maybe he just wasn't that hungry. So you could probably rehydrate more.
He wasn't that hungry. Yeah, he wasn't that hungry because he didn't lose that much weight to make the weight.
No, but seriously speaking, though, I'd love to see him against the top guys at 147. Just, you know, to see. I think it'd be an interesting fight, whether he's competitive or not. You know, I don't know, but just I hope that gets made eventually.
I definitely agree with you. It's interesting, but I think it's predictable. And I think the best part about, especially a Mikey Garcia fight, when you're dealing with guys like Mikey who are basically head and shoulders above everybody else, is you want to fight where it's 50-50 with them. And I don't think it is 50-50. Good question. Mikey versus Jeff Horn. That's a winnable fight. I think that's a winnable fight. Yeah, Mikey versus Jeff Horn. I think Mikey, when it comes to boxing, Mikey easily outboxes him. I don't think that's a question.
No, I think Horn might beat him worse than he beat Pacquiao.
Horn barely beat Manny Pacquiao. So I don't know about that. One thing I am wondering about, and one of you maybe can answer this, is what is with this trend on the subreddit that has people starting to think that Horn could beat Terrence Crawford?
Now, when you say Mikey Garcia beats Horn, are you being biased?
No. And it's Mikey, not Mickey.
Same difference.
No, it's a very different thing.
Okay.
Like, when you say Mickey, I think of like a 59-year-old guy. When you say Mikey, you know, I think of a little tan dude.
Mikey.
Yo, I'm going to hop in here because it was my question in the chat.
Sure.
I asked about that. I really think that Horn's style is pretty bad for Mikey. Yeah, he'll march forward. He'll be rough. He'll be gritty. But we've seen, as you've noted, in his past two fights at 140, he's gotten bloodied up. Mikey, whether it's his nose is just really fragile, or if he's got some, you know, weak skin, he isn't the most durable guy. And I think against a really huge dude at 147 like Horn, who doesn't have much in the way of tactics or skill. Well, he's got some basic skills, but not in comparison to Mikey. But he has that grinder style where he's dangerous throughout the fight and is able to just wear Mikey down throughout the rounds. I could see him losing a significant portion of the fight, but still just kind of breaking Mikey over the course of it and winning a split decision or squeaking out a UD at the very end, because Mikey just physically can't keep up with someone who outweighs him by, I don't know, 20 pounds on fight night.
Yeah, I don't subscribe to that, simply because Jeff Horn was probably losing to Gary Cochran, and anybody who's in a competitive fight with Gary Cochran is just not meant to be on the world level, because Gary Cochran is pretty far from that.
But is Mikey meant to be on the world level at 147?
I don't think so. And Jeff Horn is actually not anywhere close to the world level. So these are, you know, different levels. Mikey would have to fight a completely different style, a safer style against a welterweight. Even if it was a lower tier welterweight, he would have to be really safe, because at least until he proves that he can take those punches, and it's something that he needs to figure out over time and not run into something too quick. Like, you saw Danny Garcia's ascent to 147. Garcia's a bigger guy than Mikey, and he still took his time moving up to 147, and I believe Amir Khan did as well. Now, Khan never could take a punch anyway, but Danny Garcia moved up slowly because you're about to jump in the division full of murderers. This is where the best talent in boxing is at, and the reason why is because those that fame and glory of a fight with Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, just draws out the best in people. And he had to take it slow, and even then, it wasn't good enough because he lost to Keith Thurman. So, it's not a good idea for him to go to 147. I understand that he wants the big fights, but it's just, this is a guy with so much potential. It'd be a shame if he lost it off of something like trying to chase a fight for money rather than letting a big fight come naturally. Can we talk about how Mikey Garcia hates boxing? Does anybody remember the story that they want to talk that they want to share for tweet? Okay, well, this is, you know, when Mikey left boxing for a little while, part of the rumor about why he left was that Mikey didn't have his heart in boxing, and it was never about the money, truly. It was more about the fact that Mikey just didn't have his heart fully in boxing, that he fell into boxing because that's what the family did, and he happened to be good at it because he was surrounded by a good trainer and a former world champion who became a good trainer. So Mikey basically grew up living and breathing boxing, and therefore he basically, you know, became a boxing textbook, and you can see it in his style of fighting. Mikey is a terrific fighter who does every, I mean, if you go back and watch that fight, his the first few rounds are brilliant when you see Mikey's movement in the fight. Like, his distance management in the first few rounds is unbelievable. The way he kept himself in range to hit Lipinets. And but anyway, Mikey leaves boxing, and part of what people thought was that Mikey just doesn't want to be a boxer. And the proof is that he was giving interviews and talking about, like, well, what I really wanted to be in life is become a cop. And he moved away from Oxnard, where his brothers live, and he moved down to Moreno Valley, which is, at least over here, like a 2-hour drive, maybe even a little longer in traffic. And so that at least that's what people said, that his heart was questioned. And you can kind of get the sense that maybe there's an ounce of truth to that, because when he came back, he was giving interviews about how he's fallen in love, back in love with the sport, and he's more committed and all that stuff. So I think, you know, Mikey's back, and you can totally tell. You don't take these tough fights if you're not fully back. So White Ranger, is that you trying to tag yourself in?
Yo.
Okay, let's hear what you got to say.
Just to piggyback on what you're talking about with Mikey, I think a big part of it was he was looking for, I mean, not to speak for Mikey, but it seemed like he was looking for motivation. And I think being stuck in the top rank system where you're fighting the Miguel Mariagas and the Raimundo Beltrans of the world, taking over was not really connecting with him. And I do think that there's some truth to now that he has the freedom to kind of pick his own career path, he has found a little bit more motivation to actually go and set goals for himself and accomplish them.
That's a good point, you know, because while he may not get those fights, the possibility that he does get those big fights is a way, like, if you think about it, I'm just trying to find an analogy for us because we're all basically regular people. It's the difference between working a job where your role is something specific, like in Leo's case, construction worker, or, you know, that's a lot different than, say, the guy who works as a business analyst and there's room for growth, and everyone gets promoted usually within a year and a half or 2 years, and there's many different departments that he can go into and different levels of management. It's a way different thing when you're stuck being with a when you're stuck with a path where the only thing that's there for you is maybe a little bit better version of what you're already doing. Whereas, and that's what it's like to be with one promoter, where you're stuck with basically what they say and you do what they say. And then sometimes you can, and then some people, they get a career and they have all the, you know, do I really want to give a, I don't know. I have a personal example, I guess I could give, but like, my girlfriend, she like her company, she's gotten promoted like 3 times and, or at least had opportunities, and they were like in different domains of the business and all this stuff. And it's crazy to see the difference between that and say your average construction worker, like what do they get to do? Be a construction worker? Now, my side piece doesn't listen to this, so I will be safe. Don't worry, guys. You don't have to have any concern. Nobody knows that I actually do a podcast. White Ranger, did you want to say anything else? Or you don't want to get it all out and hotshot the territory?
No, I'm trying to build things up slowly. Solid booking.
Okay. Okay, so you wouldn't want to start and just go for your finisher on 4 guys?
No, it's not really my style.
Okay. Well, let's tag someone else in. Oh my God. Tony, I'm going to start reading the comments that you're saying. I think this is worth downloading it. Tony just said, my side piece has never seen my face. Thank goodness for glory holes. If Khan can fight at middleweight, so can Mikey Garcia. If Manny could steamroll welterweights, why can't Mikey in his prime? So someone's bringing up a good point. Static Eruption. Oh, Jesus Christ, Tony. He just said Ndongo is a bigger threat in Africa than HIV. Come on, dude. That's not right. So someone said, imagine if Mikey went up to beat Shot Cotto. And no one realized Cotto was shot, so we all thought Mikey was the GOAT. Someone unmuted themselves. Is that you trying to respond to that, or was that just an accident? Okay. Well, I don't think Cotto was shot at all. Yes, Ali landed on him, but like Cotto was still getting back into that fight with the torn bicep. Like, let's not really act like, okay, Cotto did get rocked. He did, like, all of that did happen, okay? But I don't think that Cotto was that badly gone that Mikey would have went up and destroyed him. Do you guys get what I'm saying? I'm not trying to say that Mikey couldn't have won, but that he just would not have been able to destroy him. Someone want to tag themselves in?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. What's up, man?
I just wanted to...
Thanks for joining the Stephen A. Smith Show.
No problem. I just wanted to say I was... impressed, I guess. Maybe not impressed, but I certainly applaud Peter Petrov. I think his name is.
I wasn't expecting this one. Let's hear where you go with this.
I don't know, to come in 5 days notice, moving up in weight against like the unbeaten Russian guy. He's wearing like a full Nike kit, like a full clean Nike kit that doesn't even have like the iron-on shitty things that like were falling off Lipinets' shorts. To come in such short notice against a guy who's clearly going to fuck you up. The guy sat there and banged, and I don't know. I thought it was cool. It made me a fan.
I'm totally on board with you. Okay, I think that what Petrov did was pretty phenomenal, and the fact that he was competitive, and none of the knockdowns truly look like he was really hurt, and. Clarify what the fight was. Well, Ivan Baranchuk fought Peter Petrov, which we had a scoop on last week because Tom overheard a conversation between Lou DiBella and Steven Espinoza. He was snooping backstage at the Wilder fight. But anyway, here we go. Peter Petrov steps in on 5 days' notice to take this fight after Anthony Yigit pulled out. which I assume he pulled out. He said claiming sickness, probably sick because he saw the stupid trunks that he was going to wear based off of the Reddit voting, which was just really sad. And Petrov's a guy who's basically been a journeyman or a gatekeeper, probably a step up above journeyman, just a perennial contender for lightweight titles for a really long time. And Baranchuk is a guy, if I had to compare him to someone, it would be like he's a really, really, really good version at this point. No, I don't want to say that. That's even an insult. I would say Baranchuk is basically kind of like Lipinets in a way. He has with the exception, I think he has a much better jab. Baranchuk's jab is one of the great, I guess, weapons out there for a young fighter that isn't, you know, at the world level at this point. So Baranchuk basically throws a really nice jab and a bunch of power shots. So Baranchuk just kind of destroyed Petrov. Petrov was, you know, was down. He was fighting, etc. But it was just too much. Baranchuk just overpowered him, beat him. And Petrov, though, despite losing and getting stopped, which I think was only the second time in his career. The only other guy to stop him was Marcos Maidana. And Petrov was really impressive, though. The heart he showed, he kept going on. He kept going forward. He kept trying to take the fight to Baranchuk. And, you know, the younger, stronger guy prevailed in the end. And I was really impressed with Baranchuk and what he was able to do. Unfortunately, didn't work out so well. Was there anything else you wanted to say on this fight, Tweed?
No, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed both fighters. But yeah, I got nothing else to say.
Yeah, with the exception of that first heavyweight fight, that Showbox card was actually really good.
Yeah, it was really good. I fast forwarded through the heavyweights. I watched the first round the day after.
They probably still look slow fast forwarding it.
Yeah, no, it was terrible. I had like the fast forward on like three times. And like it was like, oh my god, this fight's still going on. And like even fast forwarding, it was funny. Like you'd see the ref break them apart, then they'd walk together, then break them apart, walk together, break apart. And it was like, wow, this fight really was garbage.
Yeah.
I think the fight had more clinches than punches from the way it looked.
Yeah, that's pretty typical for heavyweights who aren't very good or just don't have the power to hurt each other. It's just a ton of clinches and one shot being thrown at a time.
On fast forward, it looked like watching like two magnets like roll together, and then like you'd separate them, and then they'd get attracted to each other again.
You're talking about those ones that are kind of shaped. I don't know what the shape is, but
testicle
like,
magnets.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, no wonder why you like holding them all the time.
Every day.
Yeah, Junior Fa, another good example of this guy's getting fights because he has a knockout highlight. I mean, I think he knocked a guy out in the first round or something last time they had him on Showbox. And then he comes on and just stinks out the place. Like, just a terrible fight. And I'm not trying to say that Junior Fa is not good, because if I wanted to say that, I would just say he's not that good. And I am saying that he's not that good. But he's just completely unimpressive. Like, worse than Huey Fury. Let's see. Someone else want to go? Nobody wants to talk about John Cena, AJ Styles. This is the reason why this is going the way it's going, is that the WWE pay-per-view is on and everyone is watching it. T-Money, why don't you review the pay-per-view for us?
I'd say it's a solid 8.2 out of 10. I enjoyed myself. I'm a little upset that Dumb Ziggler didn't get the W, but you know what? I can find peace with the result.
How do you feel about the Japanese men going to face AJ?
Next question, please. Yeah, next question.
And how do you feel about Charlotte winning? She beat
the Vulture from Lion King.
How do you feel about the girl that came out that wants to fight against her?
Yeah, next question, please.
Okay, and then did you watch Valdez versus Quigg?
No, I fell asleep at
You're supposed to say next question. Mikey. Nobody cares about your you falling asleep.
Okay, well, I fell asleep, so no.
Did you want to talk about Tiger Woods or anything?
Yeah, I think Tiger Woods can cut to 175 and beat Kovalev.
Okay. Is there anything else we should ask T-Money now that we got him? Who's the best character on Friday Night Lights is?
Riggins.
Oh, my God. Who's the best idiot in Discord?
Valencia. That's the easiest question of my life.
Would Friday Night Lights be better if it was Breaking Bad?
No, absolutely not.
Who will win, AJ Styles or Nakamura?
AJ Styles.
Who's the worst promoter in Britain?
Eddie Hearn.
What does the T stand for?
Tiger.
Oh, man. Do you plan on watching Quig Valdez?
No.
Why are you in the chat then? Do you collect Discords?
Yeah. I go through every Discord until I get mod, and then I move on to the next one.
How do you feel about Yuri Foreman versus Nassim Ahmed?
Yep.
Are you below 25?
Yes.
You just made a list. All right, let's move on. Another boxing-related question. Who's got a question or something that they'd like to say? Something Peter wants to talk about Valdez versus Quig. Go on.
So that was a really fun fight. And it's another fun fight because it's Valdez's MO to get drawn into a war and to have, this time, his teeth bashed in. It's really disappointing in a way because it was such a good fight, but I know that it took something out of a guy who I really love to watch, you know? So it's going at the question that people are asking about it. Who the hell is Valdez going to fight next? Because he clearly can't fight someone who has a punch or has a bit of a weighted, well, I won't say a weight advantage for Quig, but at least was heavier on the weigh-in day and was like 142 on the day of the fight. And he goes in there and has his face smashed in and is, you know, going toe-to-toe. Can't really box out of getting into a fight on the back foot. Is he going to lose in his next, let's say, two fights if he doesn't go in against real feather fists? Because he can't keep going on and fighting a war after war after war against people who have any semblance of punching power. Because he'll be shot by, you know, how old is he? 25 or something? He'll be shot by the time he's 27.
Yeah, that's something we'll talk about. He's actually not 25, he's 27. The potential opponents for him is a real interesting thing because... he's really ran out of the guys, and now we're looking at these guys that you gotta really go to BoxRec and see if you can even recognize that they fought somebody who somebody you know fought, because if you look at the list, there's a lot of fights that are probably not gonna happen. He's not gonna fight Santa Cruz. He's not gonna fight Mares. Those guys are fighting each other anyway. Not gonna fight Frampton. Probably not gonna fight Donaire because they're fighting each other. There's Gary Russell Jr. Who's on milk cartons right now. Lee Selby and Josh Warrington are fighting each other, and that leaves us like Jojo Diaz, maybe?
Oh, God. And that's a fight that even Valdez wouldn't be able to make interesting.
I mean, they're similar fighters in that they're at least supposed to be offensively minded, but that doesn't necessarily mean they are. Well, they're offensive minded, but here's the thing with Valdez is like this guy needs to throw a jab or not a jab. He throws jabs, but he needs to throw a feint. That's literally the reason for all of Valdez's, or at least the reason for his lack of success, is that he doesn't jab, and it's seriously a problem. Baranchik kind of, this is what you see with prospects. Okay, this is how at least I can distinguish who the good prospects are from the ones that are really not going to make it that far. In Baranchik's case and Progre's fainting and setting things up. And you see his result. A beautiful destruction of Julius Ndongo, a guy that had a world title. Now, you look at Baranchik, and he's juggles and goes rounds with the guy who took the fight on 5 days' notice and is moving up in weight because he does not faint. Everything is really obvious. He has time to prepare himself every single time when a punch is getting thrown. And Valdez doesn't do that. And I'm shocked that he's made it this far without throwing feints. And it's going to catch up. It almost caught up to him in this fight. Scott Quigg
catching up to him the past three fights.
Yeah, and now he's getting into these fights where they're worth three or four fights because of the amount of damage he's taking. I can see maybe him fighting a guy like Jesus Rojas next. He just got a knockout win. He's an interim WBA titleist, and I don't think Golden Boy would send him to fight Jojo Diaz. I don't think they want Jojo to get his first world title as a WBA title. That's really not how Golden Boy rolls, unless they're dealing with somebody who's not that good, like Lucas Matisse.
Yeah, so maybe he'll be fighting Rojas. I can't really see how many more people he can keep fighting before getting into another, you know, fight against a reasonably credible opponent like Quigg and not fall to pieces. Kind of like how Francisco Vargas, you know, he had the great little run of Miura in a fight of the year contender, Salido in a fight of the year contender, and then his next fight, he just crumples because his body can't physically take the punishment. That's going to happen to Vargas within a year or two. It has to, because he's not using methods to basically make his opponents not see the shots coming in, because he's very, they know his shots are coming right in, because as you mentioned, you know, the feints, he just doesn't mix it up and make people surprised with his offense, because he's just kind of predictable in a sense, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's sad because you look at Valdez actually showed some signs in this fight that, hey, it's not all lost with this guy. He can box, and he made his name boxing. That's how he got where he is, as being a pretty competent boxer. I mean, this is a guy that's made two Olympics. You typically don't make the Olympics if you fight like Jeff Horn. So the signs are there, but, you know, there's still a lot of problems with Valdez, and it's actually a race to see how quickly he can really improve.
You talk to me about the Olympics. Deontay Wilder has a bronze medal.
Yeah, but Deontay Wilder, like, is a completely... you're talking about Deontay Wilder, who literally destroys people with one punch. And then you got Oscar Valdez, who hits people flush in the face with his best shot, and they keep coming forward. And this is something that happens on a consistent basis. It's just not... that's not an apples to apples comparison.
Yeah.
That's an apples to Roy comparison.
It was a bad joke, but the I'm thinking about it. It's very rare that I see people go to a UD and have both people just look deformed at the end of the fight. Kind of like Jack DeGale levels of just brokenness. Valdez came out with his teeth or his jaw punched in. Quigg came out there looking like Voldemort with his nose smashed to pieces. Like, how did no one, how do they have enough power to cause exterior physical damage, but not enough power to actually get someone to drop? And it keeps going back to the thing of, it's not the punches that you see that knock you out. It's the punch that you don't see. And they
saw everything.
Yeah, they saw everything coming. What can you actually train a person to do to make them, you know, hide a shot, mask a shot, flash a jab and then hit them from an angle they weren't expecting? Can you do that with Valdez at this point?
There are glimpses for sure of him being elusive. He's never going to be that elusive for a couple of reasons. One being, it's really not his nature. He doesn't want that fight. He wants to have a tear up. And I can respect that, sure. That's what you want, but you can't expect to – you're not going to have a Floyd Mayweather career, certainly not going to have a Bernard Hopkins-level career or an Andre Ward-level career, because that's like that wasn't their MO. Their MO wasn't to get in there and lose as many brain cells as possible. It was to escape with the wind by any means necessary and hopefully without getting hit. So I think – was it? Were we going to go to Stu Mac last? We got to wrap this up. I got to start recording something else. Stu Mac, did you have a question or something?
I was going to say that I don't think Quaig is a world level fighter.
Hot take, buddy.
Either 122 or 125. Because
he almost beat Frampton.
He didn't almost beat Frampton. He lost 7 rounds, and then Frampton realized that all he needed to do was survive, and he did. I thought the Frampton fight, the scorecards made it seem a lot closer than it was, and he's just went into the Valdez fight where he had what he came into the fight at 142, was it? And he was trading with Valdez.
I heard it was 182.
He was trading with Valdez, and he didn't look like he would. It looked like Valdez was coming off better.
Tony says you're biased against English fighters. This isn't Braveheart anymore.
I would be offended if it wasn't true. But seriously, if you look at the kind of landscape of 125, I don't think Quaig comes in top 8, say. I think he's doesn't come in there, and I can't see him going back down, seeing as he's just missed weight.
Yeah, Quaig is kind of... It feels to me like Quaig is in that. Oh, first of all, I just want to say that Quaig is billed as 5'8" and Valdez is 5'5" or something. They're the same height. They are the exact same height. They were standing next to each other after the fight, like hugging each other. They're the same fight. They're the same height. But the other thing is, he's in this no man's land of he's pretty big, or he's big enough frame wise to fight in a higher division, but all of his skills and the raw skills, the physical skills, say you should not fight there. And if he's having trouble in that weight class, it's tough luck for him because he can't compete at that the higher weight class. He'll get killed.
I just don't think his power is carried up at all. Even when he came in 20 pounds heavier, he looked like Valdez was doing more damage on him.
Yeah, I mean, he did make Valdez feel his punches. But
yeah, but Valdez made his fucking nose squint 50 degrees.
I'm not saying that Valdez didn't do damage. I'm just saying that Quaig, it was obvious that the size was a factor last night. Not that big of a factor because Valdez clearly still won the fight and Quaig lost. But it was a factor. Like if Quaig had showed up as a 126-pound fighter, I think Valdez might have stopped him. Those body shots were brutal. All right, well, that is all for this episode. This is our roundtable episode. If you would like to be on this roundtable episode or you think you can do it better than these guys, well, no worries. You have your chance. We should be recording our next one in 2 weeks, I believe. We should be doing it. 2 weeks, you'll get your chance to be on one of these episodes. All you got to do is you can either message us. You could join our Discord. You could become a Patreon subscriber. You can message me. And I myself will send you an invite, but any one of those things, and you can be on too. So for all you guys, Stu Mac, Peter, Tweed, White Ranger, Rollins, I think that's it. You guys are all the people that spoke up. Tony, thank you for your comments. We will be back next week. Thanks, guys. Hey, yo, you better flee, hops, or get your head flown 3 blocks. LK rappers' hearts pumping like D-Box. And every year I gain clout and my name sprouts. Some brothers will still be burnt, the crap never came out. Penis.
Everybody's skill-wise that you've ever seen Deontay Wilder in front of were better than him. Devin Johnson.